First of all, let me start off by thanking everybody at St. Martin's for the wonderful job you did Mrs. Bush's funeral. It was a very trying time for all of us in Houston, and it couldn't have been executed any better. It was a fitting tribute to a wonderful human being. I was thinking about what to talk about this morning, and I thought I would tell you a story. It was August 24th, 2017, on Friday. I was at Gallery Furniture North Freeway awaiting the arrival of Hurricane Harvey. And about 12 of us had decided to sleep there that night, anticipating the worst. So I snuck into the bedding department, slept on a Tempur-Pedic mattress, and I slept very well. I woke up on Saturday morning, it was raining cats and dogs, and there was 3 feet of water in the feeder road, so we had to close on Saturday. We never close on Saturday unless it's Christmas Day. And I was full of lots of anxiety because, to me, a day without cash flow is worse than a day without oxygen. So we sat around until about 4 o'clock. Finally, about 4 o'clock, at least on the north side of Houston, the sun came out, the sky cleared up. The water drained off the roads, and I drove around the neighborhood. There were several retailers, restaurants open, and we opened, and we sold a few sofas and mattresses, and I thought the worst was over. I came back home. I live half a mile from here, and went to sleep that Saturday night. I knew it was raining hard all Saturday night. I didn't think anything of it. I got up Sunday morning to go to church over there by the store, and I got up Sunday morning to go to church. There was no water in the house, but there was a ton of water in the street I live on, so went back in the house about 11 o'clock. Finally, about 11 o'clock, got very antsy, got my little black truck and drove through the water, got on San Felipe to go to Gallery Furniture, Post Oak, and Westheimer. San Felipe was very badly flooded, and as I'm going down San Felipe, there's this lady in her BMW. All these big trucks kept coming by and pushing water into her vehicle. She motioned me to push her car up on the median, so I did that. My tailpipes went underneath the water, and the truck should have stopped then. This story would have been very different, but it didn't. I pushed her up on the median. She thanked me, and I went on. Westheimer was flooded. Post Oak was flooded, but our store's got a little elevated parking lot there at Post Oak and Westheimer, so I went by it. It was fine. I got on, drove down Westheimer the wrong way to get on 610. I got on 610 about 11 o'clock, 11:30, went over the first overpass, and the cars are coming the wrong way on the freeway. That's when you know that the shit has hit the fan. That's a Texas colloquialism. But anyway, I knew it was serious. So I got to Gallery Furniture, and I called Jeremy, one of our warehouse guys who'd stayed there both nights, and I asked him how to get there. He said, you can't get off on the exit road. Because the feeder road's flooded, get off on the entrance ramp, come the wrong way on the feeder road, you might get there, and I got there at noon. And the phone was ringing off the wall, and the emails were exploding, and the text messages were going ding, 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 nonstop for an hour and a half. And the people were saying, come rescue us, we're going to drown. It wasn't that the firemen and the EMTs and the policemen had done a bad job, it wasn't that they had done a magnificent job, it also was, this was truly a flood of biblical proportions. And we'd done a good job of preparing for this hurricane. We rented about 24 of these Penske 26-foot bed trucks with very high cabs in them to get through a lot of water. We were ready for that. What we weren't ready for was the fact that none of our employees could get to work. They were all flooded in also. So we decided to open Gallery Furniture North Freeway as a shelter for the people and their pets from the storm, and Gallery Furniture Richmond as a shelter for the people with their pets from the storm. And we had to go out and rescue these people, but I had no way to get the message out. So I called my son James, who was stranded in Dallas with his wife and his three children. And I said, James, how do I get the message out that both these stores are going to be open as safe havens for people to get out of the storm? And how do I get the message out? We need people with commercial driver's license to come drive these trucks and pick people up. He said, Dad, you got to do a Facebook Live. I said, boy, I'm 67 years old. I've never done a Facebook Live. So he talked me through the Facebook Live. In an hour and a half, it had 4.5 million views. And the people started coming in, and they waited up the feeder road. And they came in with a shell-shocked and traumatized look on their face, covered with dirty sewer water, carrying their life's belongings in a black plastic trash bag. And the people came in with a commercial driver's license. They showed us their driver's license. We paired them up two at a time. We sent them out in the trucks. We have a sign at the front of Gallery Furniture that says the American West was not settled by men and women who had taken a course on how to be a pioneer. And we sent them out. And they rescued people on the overpass in the driving rain, and they rescued them in convenience stores where they'd taken shelter from the storm, and they rescued them in neighborhoods, and the boats brought them to the truck and loaded them in the back of the truck. We had to load them in the back of the truck like cattle, 8, 10, 12 at a time. There was no other way to do it. And they came in. And these two brothers went out and picked up two truckloads of people, and by 8 o'clock I got a call from an area over at I-10 in Wallaceville where the rain was even worse than everywhere else. The entire Houston Police Department substation there, all 50 officers' cars, were totally submerged while the officers were out on patrol. And we sent these people out, these two brothers out, to rescue this group of people out at I-10 in Wallaceville. And so then it got dark. It was still very hot and humid and raining, and it got dark, very dark. And about 10 o'clock at night, I get a call from this woman, and she says, I was talking to my husband. He's in the back of one of your trucks at I-10 in Wallaceville, and there's 8 or 10 people in the back of the truck with him, and all of a sudden everybody started screaming, and his cell phone cut off. She says, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I frantically called the phone number we had for these two brothers, and they wouldn't answer either, and I'm thinking, my God, we've drowned 8 or 10 people. So the only two people we had left to send to try to rescue these people was our receiving manager named Anthony. He's about 6'8" tall, and this other kid that's worked for me since he's 8 years old, his name's Junior. He's about 4'10" tall. So we sent them out to rescue these people. They were like the odd couple. Normally to get from Gallery Furniture, I-10 in Wallaceville takes about 20 minutes, but as they looked on Google Maps, every road was black or red, impassable. And they finally got to I-10 in Wallaceville and tried to exit on the feeder road, and the Cajun Navy was launching boats off the feeder road, so that wasn't going to happen. They started driving through the neighborhoods over these bridges, not knowing if it was a bridge or they were going to drive into the creek because the water was 5 or 6 feet deep. And finally, the water was touching the windshield. They were half a mile from where the GPS system showed the truck to be, and they stopped and parked at a convenience store, and the wake from the water was so strong it took the ice machine and floated it away. And Anthony got out, since he's very tall, to wade through the dirty water and try to find these people. Junior stayed in the truck because the water was over his head. And as he's wading through the water, he can still see the street lights. He's trying to get a feel for how to get back to the truck. He finally gets to the truck, and there's nobody in the truck, and now he's really panicked. And his girlfriend, wife-to-be, is at the furniture store with me. They're going to get married in 2 months, and she keeps calling Anthony and calling him and calling Junior. Neither one of them are answering their cell phones either. And she has a premonition that he, too, Anthony, has drowned. And the tension out there at 2 in the morning is so thick you can cut it with a knife. So Anthony's panicked after these people aren't in the truck, and he's rushing through the dirty water. As he's rushing through the dirty water, trying to get back to the truck, he promptly steps in a manhole. And the vortex of water sucks him in so fast he has no time to take a breath, and the water sucks him in, and he's heading to Galveston Bay. Instinctively, he sticks out his very long arms, catches him on the concrete, fights his way up, gets a breath of air, and the water sucks him in again. He had shorts on, stuck his legs out against the concrete, ripped all the skin off both of his legs, fights his way up and gets out. Goes back to the truck and gets Junior. By then the water receded a bit and they went a different route. And they finally got back to the truck, which was right there on the feeder road at I-10 in Wallaceville. And they looked across I-10. There was nobody on the road, of course. It was flooded. They saw a truck with a boat launch on the back of it. They waded across I-10, climbed over the fence, got to where the lady was in the truck, and asked her, do you know what happened to the people in that truck over there? She said, yeah, my husband picked him up in his boat and took him somewhere. Now it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's raining very heavily out there on the North Freeway. It's hot and it's humid, and we've got the air conditioning in that furniture store turned down about 65 degrees because we had 250 people sleeping everywhere trying to make them comfortable. They're using these blue furniture wrap blankets as blankets. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's still raining very hot and heavy. It's hot and humid outside. And this little Hispanic girl shows up at the front door, and she's about 7 years old with her parents and another guy who I think was her uncle. And they've got water all over them, and they've waded up the feeder road to try to get to us. And she's crying, and she's hot, and she's traumatized. And then she opens the door, and she's trying to get the nerve up to come up front and talk to me. And she steps in that cold room, kind of like this one is, and she's totally wet, and now she's freezing, and her little teeth are chattering. And she comes up to me, and she finally gives up the nerve to say to me, can we stay here tonight? And I've seen my people cry. And she stayed there, and hundreds did. They stayed North Freeway in Richmond. And over the next several days, the strangest thing, all these reporters from the New York Times and Wall Street Journal and CBS and NBC and Fox News and BBC and Australian Broadcasting Company, you name them, all of them, came out there, and they all said the same thing. How could you possibly let these total strangers stay in your fancy furniture store and sleep on your mattresses and your sofas and your recliners? How could you possibly do this? And my answer was, how could I not? That's how I was brought up in a Christian family. My beloved parents are both deceased and in heaven, I would hope, and my brother George is as well. And they were up there looking down on me saying, your move, you know what to do. There was never a question. And so we let the people in. And Hurricane Harvey was indeed the worst of times for Southeast Texas. All the way from Rockport to Houston to Beaumont, 50 to 70 inches of rain. Enough rain to fuel Niagara Falls for 21 days straight. One of every five cars in Harris County totaled. Hundreds of thousands of homes with anywhere from 12 inches to 12 feet of dirty water in them. It was the worst of times. But it was also the best of times because for one brief moment in time, we all forgot about right-wing politics or left-wing politics, and all we cared about was people. And isn't that what we're supposed to do? We cared about people. And over the next 6 weeks, we gave away cleaning supplies and baby diapers and bottled water and all those survival products to people at the store for 6 or 8 weeks. The outpouring of support and generosity from the Texans was unmatched. People came from all over Texas, all over the United States, from New York to California, Ohio, Pennsylvania, you name it. They brought truckloads of stuff in every day. One rapper from Houston, his name is Trey the Truth. I wouldn't know him in 1,000 years. He donated 20 52-foot truckloads of bottled water. And the people just kept coming and helping, and the people of faith stepped up. The faith-based community stepped up. I'll never forget, 2 weeks after that storm, I was up there at the front of that store on a Sunday afternoon, and this woman came in wearing a yellow Mormon Tabernacle Church vest, and she said, can I bring Gifford Nielsen out here and 8 or 10 elders from the Mormon Church? I said, sure. They came out in about an hour. And I asked them how many volunteers from around the world they had on the ground helping out the people in Houston. And they said within 10 days they had 6,000 volunteers living with other Mormons in Houston from all around the world. In one neighborhood in North Houston, 600 homes got water in them. They had one Mormon live there. They mucked out the Mormon's house, and then they cleaned it up, and they fed the entire neighborhood and mucked out all 600 homes in the neighborhood. And I gave this speech to California, in California, to a group of people, and the lady came up to me after the speech and said, that's easy for them to do. That's how they were brought up. My reply was, why can't we all be brought up that way? Why can't we all be taught those values at the Teach of St. Martin's to help each other? It doesn't matter, black, white, red, or purple. We had these three people there from the Salvation Army for 4 weeks giving away supplies. The youngest celebrated her 82nd birthday at Gallery Furniture. They'd been to every natural disaster in the United States for the last 50 years. They said they'd never seen a group as resilient and as giving as Texans. Winston Churchill once said, what type of people do they think we are? We are Texans and we take care of each other. We're Texans and we take care of each other. It was a shining moment. And what did I learn from Hurricane Harvey from a business standpoint? We went 5 or 6 days without cash flow into a small business like us. That's pretty significant. But we made a conscious decision because of my religious upbringing to put people before profits, and I would do the same thing tomorrow. But the strangest thing happened. I was, as a 68-year-old guy, I was not even on the radar of any millennial in this town. After Hurricane Harvey, we learned that by doing good, you do well. Now, I can't go to any Starbucks in this entire town and some millennial doesn't pay for coffee for me. I went to the drive-thru the other day and they paid for it. And these millennials come in every day and buy furniture. You know why? Because they like genuine, authentic, real, and transparent. And they like the fact that we let everybody in. And it changed the whole business. 8 out of 10 customers walk in there and now say, I'm here to buy from you because of what you did. They say, I'm here to buy from you because of what you did. Price doesn't matter. That's why I'm here. Doing well by doing good. And so now going forward, Gallery Furniture faces the Amazonization of retailing. You probably didn't know that Jeff Bezos went to River Oaks Elementary School. And Amazon is changing the world for all of us retailers, a total transformation, and putting a lot of us out of business. So we don't need as much retail space as we used to because it used to be people shop 10 stores. Now they look online, they pick out one store, or they buy it online. If they come in that one store, they're probably going to buy a thing. So we're going to take about 30 to 40% of our square footage over the next several months and transpose it into a community center. And starting this month, we're partnering with Houston Community College and the Buckner Hope Center. We're going to teach classes in there on ESL, on ESL, GED, commercial driver's license. We're going to teach construction skills. We're going to teach welding. We're going to teach all these things that Mike Rowe talks about, dirty jobs, where people can go out and get a job and make $150,000 a year and perform jobs that cannot be robotized. And I think that everybody doesn't need to go to college and come out of college with a $300,000 student loan at 9% interest and have that chase them for the rest of their life. I think there's a lot of people out there that need to try different things, and that's what we're going to do. And we're going to turn those stores into a community center. The litmus test for all of us in retail is this. Would the customers miss you if you were to go out of business tomorrow? We have to set up that connection with the community, and if they would miss us if we were to go out of business tomorrow, we will stay in business. We will continue to prosper and thrive. And you know the other thing about Hurricane Harvey? It taught these millennials that the essence of living is giving. It taught them that the essence of living is giving. They need examples. They need role models. They need people other than the Kardashians to say, this is what you ought to do. Think about it. And they will all follow the role models. We'll just set the role model for them. And St. Martin's Church has done a great job of leading the way. After Hurricane Harvey, I received a lot of awards, none of which I deserved. The heroes of Hurricane Harvey were the first responders, the firemen, the policemen, the EMTs, the National Guardsmen who risked their life every day. One telling story, there was a HPD officer riding in the back of one of those military trucks going to rescue people. In the driving rain, he'd been up for 96 hours rescuing people. He was asleep in the back of the truck in the driving rain. Then when they got to the destination, he woke right up, went right to work, the call of duty. But I got this award from the Four Chaplains Group. I didn't know what it was, but they gave me the award at the Michael DeBakey VA Hospital in the Texas Medical Center. Dr. DeBakey is one of my heroes. And I walked in the hospital, and there was a big bust of Michael DeBakey, who changed the world and changed heart surgery forever. And I knew I was in the right place. So I thought I would read you this story about the four chaplains. I think it's worth repeating. This is the type of behavior we all need to aspire to. The four chaplains' story. It was the evening of February 2nd, 1943. And the United States Army Transport Dorchester was crowded to capacity, carrying 902 servicemen, merchant, seamen, and civilian workers. Once a luxury coastal liner, the 5,649-ton vessel had been converted into an Army transport ship. Dorchester, one of three ships in the SG-19 convoy, was moving steadily across the icy waters from Newfoundland toward an American base in Greenland. SG-19 was escorted by Coast Guard cutters Tampa, Ensenada, and Comanche. Hans J. Danielson, the ship's captain, was concerned and cautious. Earlier, the Tampa had detected a submarine with its sonar. Danielson knew he was in dangerous waters even before he got the alarming information. German U-boats were constantly prowling these vital sea lanes, and several ships had already been targeted, blasted, and sunk. The Dorchester was now only 150 miles, however, from its destination. But the captain ordered the men to sleep in their clothing and keep life jackets on. Many soldiers sleeping deep in the ship's hold disregarded the order because of the engine's tremendous heat. Others ignored it because the life jackets were terribly uncomfortable. On February 3rd at 12:55 a.m., a periscope broke through the chilly Atlantic waters. Through the crosshairs, an officer aboard the German submarine U-223 spotted the Dorchester. The U-223 approached the convoy on the surface, and after identifying and targeting the ship, he gave orders to fire the torpedoes, and a fan of three were fired. The one that hit was decisive and deadly, striking the starboard side amidship, far below the waterline. Captain Danielson alerted that the Dorchester was taking water rapidly and sinking, gave the order to abandon ship. In less than 20 minutes, the Dorchester would slip beneath the Atlantic's icy waters. Tragically, the hit had knocked out power and radio contact with the three escort ships. The Coast Guard cutter Comanche, however, saw the flash of the explosion. It responded and then rescued 97 survivors. The Ensenada circled the Dorchester, rescuing an additional 132 survivors. The third Tampa continued on, escorting the remaining two ships. Aboard the Dorchester, panic and chaos had set in. The blast had killed scores of men, and many more were seriously wounded. Others, stunned by the explosion, were groping in the darkness. Those sleeping without clothing rushed topside, where they were first confronted by a blast of icy Arctic air and then by the knowledge that death awaited. Men jumped from the ship into the lifeboats, overcrowding them to the point of capsizing, according to eyewitnesses. Other rafts thrown into the Atlantic drifted away before men could get into them. Through the pandemonium, according to those present, four Army chaplains brought hope and despair and light and darkness. Those chaplains were Lieutenant George L. Fox, Methodist, Alexander D. Good, Jewish, John P. Washington, Roman Catholic, and Clark Poling, Dutch Reform. Quickly and quietly, the four chaplains spread out among the soldiers. There they tried to calm the frightened and tend the wounded and guide the disoriented toward safety. Witnesses of that terrible night remember hearing the four chaplains offer prayers for the dying and encouragement for those who would live, said Wyatt Fox, son of Reverend Fox. One witness, Private William P. Bednar, found himself floating in oil-smeared water, surrounded by dead bodies and debris. I could hear men crying, pleading, praying, Bednar recalled. I could also hear the chaplains preaching courage. Their voices were the only thing that kept me going. Another sailor, Petty Officer John Mahoney, tried to re-enter his cabin, but Rabbi Good stopped him. Mahoney Concerned about the cold, Arctic Air explained he had forgotten his gloves. Never mind, Rabbi Good responded, I have two pair. The rabbi then gave the petty officer his own gloves. In retrospect, Mahoney realized that Rabbi Good was not conveniently carrying two pair of gloves, and the rabbi had decided not to leave the Dorchester. By this time, most of the men were topside, and the chaplains opened his storage locker and began distributing life jackets. It was then that Eugene Clark saw an astonishing sight. When there were no more life jackets to distribute in the storage room, the chaplains removed theirs and gave them to four frightened young men. It was the finest thing I have ever seen or hope to see this side of heaven, said John Ladd, another survivor who saw the chaplain's selfless act. Ladd's response is understandable. The altruistic action of the four chaplains constitutes one of the purest spiritual and ethical acts a person can make. When giving their life jackets away, Rabbi Good did not call out for a Jew. Father Washington did not call out for a Catholic, nor did Reverends Fox and Poland call out for a Protestant. They simply gave their life jackets to the next man in line. As the ship went down, survivors in nearby rafts could see the four chaplains, arms linked, braced against the slanting deck. Their voices could also be heard offering prayers. Of the 902 men aboard the United States Army Transport Dorchester, 672 died, leaving 230 survivors. When the news reached American shores, the nation was stunned by the magnitude of the tragedy and heroic conduct of the four chaplains. Valor is a gift. Valor is a gift, Carl Sandburg once said. Those having it never know for sure whether they have it until the test comes. The test came to the faith-based community of Houston August 24, 25, 26, 27, 2017. The faith-based community stood up and passed the test. Thanks very much.